Personification is a literary technique that puts human characteristics on an object or an idea. That's what I just told the children in Children's Church here. And one of the most common instances of personification is this image of justice. What does the idea of justice look like if you put it into human form, put human characteristics on it? Well, this statue kind of has that personification aspect to it, because this statue is of a woman who is blindfolded, you notice in there, and this blindfold implies that this justice system should be impartial, blind to who you are as far as sex, gender, race, economic background, all kinds of different things that just shouldn't take it into account as far as who is right and who's wrong, that they should not play favorite, that justice is unbiased, right, and fair to all. It hears only the facts of the case and is not swayed by what appears on the surface. Some depictions even of the justice used to not have a blindfold on it, and so that was more the idea that justice sees all and can apply the justice fairly to all those as well. But it's many ideas of this fairness to all. And of course, justice has in its hands a scale, meaning again, the right and wrong is balanced. The justice is weighed between what is right and wrong, what is good and evil, what is law and order, both in balance. It symbolizes that they listen to both sides of the argument, and not just one-sided arguments. They hear both the prosecution and the defense, and they weigh those in what is greater and what is better. They don't put their thumb on a scale in one instance or another for one reason or another. And what you cannot see in this picture is many times justice is pictured with a sword also. It's in our other hand there. And that kind of symbolizes the authority behind the justice and the judgments that they have, the verdicts that they would decide, that they are swift and final in their rulings, that justice has the authority to make life and death decisions. And so we see this imagery and this symbol a lot in this idea of personifying what an idea is, because justice is just an idea, but we can picture it with human characteristics, human form. Another common picture and personification that we see around us many times is this, the Statue of Liberty. If you had the idea in your mind of what liberty looks like in a person form or personal form, how would you personify liberty? Well, this might be it. In fact, this statue has been personifying liberty for 137 years. And if this statue had a human voice, it might say what is enshrined at its base: "Give to me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." Right? Personification is a very powerful tool. It helps us imagine what an idea or an object might be if it had human characteristics. And personification it's a powerful tool in bringing ideas like this to life. It puts abstract, philosophical, figurative language into flesh and blood reality. It's given human qualities figuratively to non-human things, so that it might help us understand what they mean. Oftentimes we hear in the Bible that the hand of God reached out. Well, does God, who is spirit, actually have a hand? Probably not in a physical way, definitely, but he does in a spiritual way, and the idea of God even speaking to us. Does God have a vocal cord like we have physical vocal cords? No, and yet God does work and move and speak to us. So personification is all around us, and you'd be surprised. In fact, this next week I would encourage you, just think of different ways that personification is used. I mean, one of the ways I heard last week was, Marge comes in like a lion, and out like a lamb. That's personification. That's putting human, well, actually animal characteristics onto an idea or a month. But it's kind of like that. Well, we've been talking in the book of Proverbs and looking at proverbial wisdom, at this incredible book. The concepts of wisdom are sometimes hard to understand, hard to express. But Solomon uses this idea, this literary technique of personification to wisdom, and says, okay, wisdom, what if we put her in a human body? What if we put wisdom into a form that could speak to us? What would it say? What would it express? How would it describe itself? And so Solomon uses his imagination here and tells us what he thinks wisdom would say if it could speak to us in human words. And I think we can learn more about this idea of wisdom by listening to the words that wisdom speaks. So Wisdom Speaks to Us is my sermon title. And the first thing I think that wisdom would say is that everyone is welcomed. Come one, come all. None are turned away, none are denied. Come learn about me. Everyone is welcomed. If wisdom is what you seek, everyone's a winner. Everyone can come and learn. Young, old, rich, poor, wise, foolish, the simple or the disciplined can all come. Everyone can gain wisdom. You do not have to be a certain sex or a certain age or a certain race or a certain ethnic origin or have wisdom already. You can come. Everyone is welcomed. All it takes is just a willingness to be taught. And I think that's the key to wisdom, is a willingness to be taught. We'll see, and we talked about this several times already, how the fools are unwilling to talk. They think they think themselves already have learned enough, that their pride, their haughtiness just makes them unwilling to want to learn more. And yet, wisdom comes even to them, says, hey, come, I want to welcome you. This is the key time and time again. The proud are foolish. The fools are pride and unwilling to be taught. They despise teaching of their parents or teachers. They do not listen to the lessons given to them. The fools are proud and puffed up. But if you're willing to be taught, if you're willing to come and essentially bow at the feet of wisdom, you can be taught. If you want to be listeners, you'll be welcomed by wisdom. And this is how Solomon starts his personification of wisdom in chapters 8 and chapters 9. Let's read about those in chapter 8, starting in verse 1. Does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights, along the way where the points meet, she takes her stand. Beside the gates leading into the city, at the entrances, she cries out loud. To you, O people, I cry out. I raise my voices to all mankind. You who are simple, gain prudence. You who are foolish, gain understanding. Listen, for I have worthy things to say. I open my lips to speak what is right. My mouth speaks what is true, for my lips detest wickedness. It goes on and says, all the words of my mouth are just. None of them are crooked or perverse. To the discerning, all of them are right. They are faultless to all who have knowledge. Again, wisdom is opening her arms and saying, come, all are welcomed. It doesn't take much, but it's just a listening ear. And notice, first of all, that wisdom is calling everywhere, not just to everyone, but everywhere. It's not just in a temple or a synagogue where the Jewish people used to learn in Solomon's day. It's not in a corner or somewhere hidden away in some hidden place. She's at the crossroads where everyone passes by. She's at the city gates where the people are. In fact, I like how the Message translates these first few verses when it says this in its translation. She has taken her stand at First and Main, at the busiest intersection, right in the city square where the traffic is the thickest. She shouts. I mean, this is for everyone. This is not just for some elite group of people, not just for our church, but this is for everyone. Wisdom is out there. Her message is for not just for the elites or the highest in the society, but everyone and everywhere. She speaks to every kind of people, those who are simple, those who are foolish, the simple who want to hear and the foolish who refuse to hear, but still they are welcomed. Again, I like the Message's unique take on these verses. Uses wisdom's voice when it says, you, I'm talking to all of you, everyone out here on the streets. Listen, you idiots, learn good sense. You blockheads, shape up. Don't miss a word of this. I'm telling you how to live well. I'm telling you how to live your best. Right? That's what wisdom is saying. Hey, all of you, simple blockheads, everyone, idiots even, come, learn. I'm here. You are welcomed. And it's no difference when you get to chapter 9 as well. When wisdom is personified in chapter 9, she says the same thing. It says, wisdom has built her house, and she has hewn out its seven pillars. She has prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She has set her table. She sends out her maids, and she calls from the highest point in the city. And this is what she says. Let all who are simple come in here, she says. Those who lack judgment. To those who lack judgment, come, eat my food, drink my wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of understanding. Everyone, come. Come to me. She welcomes people into her house that she has built. She has prepared a feast for them, a feast not for the body, for the mind. That's what her food and drink are. It's food to nourish our minds and our souls. Kind of reminds me of the imagery that we talked about last week of the food and drink of the adulteress and the prostitute who uses that as kind of a bait, kind of a bait and switch type of thing. But wisdom is not that way. Wisdom is tempting and wants to appeal to our senses like that, but it's not something that's saying, I'm going to give you this and promises and gives us something else. It promises one thing and gives us something else. You see, sin promises us life but leads to death, as we saw last week. But wisdom promises life and says, I'm going to give it to you. It delivers on its promise, and that's because of its source. You see, sin and temptation come from the devil. Comes from the deceiver, but wisdom comes from God. God who is faithful to keep his promises. And so wisdom is also in the form of temptation. Hey, come, I'm so attractive. Come in me. And it's attractive and appealing. And we'll see in a bit, it has a lot to offer. But getting back to my main point, wisdom is for everyone. She sends her servants out to the highest point from the mountaintop. She calls, come, come one and all. Knows those words. Let all who are simple come. Let them eat my food, my wine. Leave your simple ways and gain my wisdom and understanding. You see, this message is broadcasted for all to hear and listen. But again, we need to listen with our ears, not just hear with our ears. There's a difference between hearing with our ears and listening with our ears, right? When you hear with the ears, as we talked a few weeks ago, that's just the sound vibrating our eardrum, right? But when we listen, it vibrates our heart. Hearing just is that noise that's all around us. Listening applies it to us. And so this listening is not just saying, hey, hear what I have to say, but hear what I have to say. Hearing speaks wisdom from the mountaintops, but it's not enough. We need to leave our simple ways and walk in this wisdom. So even if wisdom speaks to everyone, the question I have for you this morning is, who's listening? Are you listening? It's more than just reading the Proverbs and saying, oh, that's some good wise sayings, or that's something I should hear. It's saying, how can I apply these lessons, these things from Proverbs into my life? How can I live? How can it change the way I interact with people? How can it change the way in how I interact with God? And so while wisdom says everyone is welcomed, only a few will actually hear and listen. Only a few will welcome and eat the food and drink that she has to offer. And I hope that we all will be fed that food instead of the bait that sin leaves for us. So come to the welcoming embrace of wisdom every time she calls out to her and listen to her welcoming voice. So not only does wisdom say everyone's welcome, but she second of all says, I am worthwhile. Also starts with a W. Welcome and worthwhile. Now, 2 weeks ago, I did a whole sermon on the benefits of wisdom, the 7 benefits of wisdom. And those two chapters, in chapters 3 and 4, I believe it was, it emphasizes all these benefits that I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time in, but I'm just going to, because this chapter here in chapters 8 and 9 kind of repeat some of the same things, but I want to read them from her human-like voice, what she might say if she would speak to us, saying, I am worthwhile. This is what it says, starting in chapter 8, verse 10. Choose my instructions instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare to her. I, wisdom, dwell together with prudence. I possess knowledge and discretion. Counsel and sound judgment are mine. I have understanding and power. By me, kings reign, and rulers make laws that are just. By me, princes govern, and all nobles rule on the earth. I love those who love me, and those who seek me find me. With me are riches and honor, enduring wealth and prosperity. My fruit is better than fine gold. What I yield surpasses choice silver. I walk in the way of righteousness, along the paths of justice, bestowing wealth upon those who love me, making their treasures full.
Okay. I look at my next slide there because it's just a repeat of this one, so I must have copied it on the wrong. But we see many benefits that we looked at before. They're more precious than gold and silver. Even kings are able to rule, and rulers reign justly because of this wisdom. They provide honor, wealth, prosperity, and affluence. They lead you to walk in the way of righteousness and justice. You see, wisdom says, follow me, because I am worthwhile. There's much to gain by learning wisdom. If you just, it will not just make you wiser, it'll help you with your walk. And if you walk the right paths, God's going to bless you. If you walk in God's path, God says he's going to bless you. And yes, some of that blessing may come in physical wealth, but more often than not, it has to do with our spiritual lives and our spiritual wellness. It gives us sound counsel and wise judgment. But once again, we see here that wisdom is saying, I'm worthwhile because I want you to know who God is. And that's a key, I think, in these verses, because it talks about how wisdom is very important to our walk with the Lord. How do we need to fear the Lord? And I'm not sure if I put that. Okay. Proverbs 8:13 says this, to fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. Again, this idea of the fear of the Lord, this phrase that we've seen already in our study of Proverbs, how that brings us closer to God. And of course, a more familiar passage might be from Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. I love those passages. In fact, I might put this one up as one of our memory verses for the month in a future month here. But I think this is what is the most wild thing about the wealth of wisdom. It's getting to know God better, getting to know what the fear of the Lord is all about. Getting to know how God blesses us with so many blessings we cannot count. That in itself is more worthwhile than the gold or silver you might get. Knowing God is more precious than these rubies and silver. Knowing God in new ways and under new circumstances just gives us new insight in who he is and who we are in his sight. This is truly a blessing of God. Now, I've been listening to the radio here a lot this last week, and I've been hearing all these songs about blessing. And there's one that is done by Wren Collective, counting every blessing, and talking about that. But there's a newer one just out here by Seth Schulter. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But it's a wonderful song, and I'm just going to play it for you this morning. It's called Counting My Blessings.
It's like it was yesterday. I was praying for a miracle, scared to have a little hope. And now looking back today, seeing all the things you've done, I can't even add them up. 1, 2, 3, up to infinity. I'd run out of numbers before I could thank you for it. God, I'm still counting my blessings. All that you've done in my life. The more that I look in the details, the more of your goodness I find. Father, on this side of heaven, I know that I'm running out of time. But I will keep counting my blessings. Oh, and I can't count that high. And I know that seasons never last forever. So God, I will remember all of the reasons my heart has to be grateful. All the times you've been faithful to me. God, I'm still counting my blessings. I'm fine. thank you for everything. God, I'm still counting my blessings.
It's a good song. Can't count our blessings because there's so many of them. So much wisdom that God gives to us. And this is what it says also at the end of chapter 8 of Proverbs. It says, now then, my sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Listen to my instruction and be wise. Do not ignore it. Blessed is a man who listens to me, watching daily at my doors, waiting at my doorway. For whoever finds me finds life and receives favor from the Lord. You know, wisdom invites us, says, hey, I'm worthwhile. Come, learn from me. Learn about all the blessings that I can give. Are we listening to this? Are we seeing the worth of wisdom in our life? If not, let's keep seeking it. Because it promises not to disappoint. And I can copy that. Okay. So the next thing that wisdom says, not just everyone is welcomed, I'm worthwhile, and finally, you can find me wherever. Now I needed another W word, but you can find me everywhere is what she's saying there. Everywhere you look, I am there. You can see me in the simplest sunrise or in the most complex of the created works. You can find wisdom wherever you look if you look carefully enough. And so this human picture of wisdom says that wisdom is something that's all around us, even from the very beginning. Let's look again there in Proverbs chapter 8, verse 22. It says, the Lord brought me forth as the first of his works. Before the deeds of old, I was appointed from eternity, from the beginning, before the world began. When there was no oceans, I was given birth. When there was no springs abounding with water. Before the mountains were settled in place. Before the hills, I was given birth. Before he made the earth or the fields or any of the dust of the world. I was there when he set the heavens in place. When he marked out the horizons on the face of the deep. When he established the clouds above and fixed securely the fountains of the deep. When he gave the sea its boundaries so waters would not overstep its commands, and when he marked out the foundations of the earth. Then I was the craftsman at his side. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in his presence, rejoicing in the whole world and delighting in mankind. I've been there. In fact, I'm everywhere as you look around. If you look around the trees or the birds or the frogs, I'm there. You can see me everywhere you look if you know how to look and to know what's there. You see, God's wisdom is something that's offered from the very beginning and it will last forever. Wisdom is what built all what we see. And by gaining wisdom, we understand more of God's creation. Now, God is not creation, but his majesty and power and creativity and his inspiration can be seen everywhere. Some people have tried to divide science and religion and say, hey, these two different things, they cannot overlap. But I think that's a very big mistake. In fact, some of the best scientists are believers because they know why this planet has been created and the complexity that God has seen. They see the wisdom in the birds and the trees. They find understanding in the beasts of the fields. They find purpose in the heart of people. And I think this is why so many times in the Bible, the trees of the fields are the animals are praising God and lifting their voices up. Or the rocks even crying out. Birds singing in the treetops. And yes, that's kind of a personification because the birds don't sing. They just tweet, I guess. But in some ways it's not. Because all nature was formed with wisdom. And they're all designed to worship the Master, the Creator. Who knows if the whale song might be a hymn of praise to the Creator that we hear in the oceans? We have not been able to translate their music, but what if their song is music to God? Or the croak of the frog we talked about this morning. What if their croak is a praise him type of thing, right? I don't know. I can't translate frog. I'm not that wise quite yet, but they could be praising God. It's because the wisdom is all around us. That's kind of what is implied in these passages here. It says, I've been created by God and molded and shaped, and you just have to look for me because I'm everywhere. I'm wherever you look. How much more should we seek that wisdom of God? This image of who even we are, because we are made in God's image. We're not made like the frogs in the image of frogs. We're made in God's image. And so when we look at God and the wisdom that he gives to us, we can see more of ourselves and more how we need to be more like God. Count those blessings, as I mentioned here in our message. Very important, because that's what God, wisdom says. I'm wherever you look. Look for me and you'll find me. Find wisdom by looking at, and we'll see this later on in Proverbs, by looking at the ant and how they store up things, or like the badger, you know? These animals, these things teach us wisdom by the way they serve their master, by the way they serve God. And as I was looking at these passages about wisdom this last week, and how it leads us to God, I remembered another passage of Scripture, and I thought this was from David, but this is probably after David and after probably Solomon's time. But it talks about how wonderful it is to find God and be with God and dwell with God. It's from Psalm 84. Let me read you a few verses from Psalm 84. It says, "How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord Almighty! My soul yearns, even faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may have her young, a place near your altar, O Lord Almighty, my King and my God. Blessed are those who dwell in your house. They are ever praising you." And then it finishes up by saying, "Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked." I love that picture there. I love the idea that we are looking for God wherever, that we're looking for wisdom, that wisdom speaks to us in voices that, if they were actual voices, could speak to us. It would say, "Welcome to everyone. Come. Join me. Learn from me. Learn more about me. All are welcomed. I am so worthwhile. I can teach you so much. It's more valuable to you than anything here on earth. And you can find me wherever you look. I'm all around." That's what wisdom tells us this morning. Are we listening? Are we hearing this voice? Are we hearing it from the wisdom this morning? And I think, like I said, more importantly, it's listening, not just hearing it, because it's not going to move our eardrums. Wisdom does not speak in those kind of terms. It speaks in the terms of our heart, through the eyes of the Savior, Jesus Christ,